My name is Paul Hobcraft. I'm here in a conversation with Brent Cooper around the topic of dealing with leadership. We believe this is an important topic to reflect upon in any entrepreneurial and broader innovation understanding, and forms one of the many important challenges innovators are facing today. My own work is mentoring, coaching, advising on innovation, attempting to piece it together in a broader context. I research, write, and offer through this work an emerging set of structures connecting our innovation world that we all operate in. In this conversation, Brent is providing through his expert opinion in this conversation how to explore dealing with leadership. This is arranged around three questions that we believe are topical, relevant, and necessary to find answers to. We aim to cover them off as deeply as possible and in practical and tactical ways. The aim is to offer emerging practice and best principles that allow you the opportunity to form your opinion and see the ways you might set about applying these in your own circumstances. Firstly, let me introduce Brent, and then provide the contents of the conversation that leads into the specific conversation and questions we're going to have together. Brent is based in San Diego. Brent travels around the globe. He speaks with entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs about how to discover and create new value. It's all about empowering individuals to make the change they want to see in the world. Brent is a New York Times best-selling author with his Lean Entrepreneur and his co-founder of Moves the Needle Consulting Company. Brent often speaks to your organization to help ignite entrepreneurial action, empowering organizations, employers to discover and create new value. Moves the Needle aims to bring an entrepreneurial spirit to the enterprise. Move the Needle ignites entrepreneurial action within organizations by educating, enabling, and empowering people to be closer to the customer, move faster, and act bolder. Central to this, as I understand, is the leveraging of design thinking and lean startup principles tailored for the enterprise. Move the Needle runs innovation boot camps, accelerator programs, and strategic advising with the aim to create immediate and lasting impact. So what we are planning to do, Brent and I, is take a particular question that's come up in the crowdsource environment within the entrepreneurial community. The structure behind the question is this: leadership and senior management engagement is notoriously hard to maintain. What structures, communication methods, and milestone factors can be put into place to help maintain that connection? We're trying to frame the answers around that. Also, dealing with different functional leaders, it often requires very different techniques or measures. And lastly, within this framing, setting these up and making them dynamic and evolving is essential to support the role of the innovator. So let's turn to question one. Brent, as you sat there very quietly listening to me, have I missed anything out firstly before we get into the questions?
I think you've got it all.
Leadership makes or breaks innovation. How should the innovator ensure the leadership stays engaged? The other parts of this question are: what examples work in your opinion on this in timing, frequency, and how to structure it so it becomes more living, emerging story? For instance, one that grows and grabs the ongoing attention of that leader. Is it possible to create a dynamic creative tension that fuels interest, commitment, and organization awareness? And how can this be ignited by the entrepreneur? So, chunky question. Hand it over to you.
Okay. So, answer part one, stop using the word innovation. So part of the problem that I see is that organizations are very poor at defining what they mean by innovation. And it sort of gets into semantics, and I understand everybody right now is going, oh no, we're not going to go all the way back to the beginning, are we? But But fundamentally, the two people sitting across the table from each other need to have the same definition of what innovation is. And yet we all sort of assume that we're all talking about the same thing. And so the innovator is out going to, oh, I'm going to go try to figure out what's some new breakthrough innovation. And the senior leader is going, well, great, we're going to be able to solve some of our problems that we're facing this year or next year. And so from the very get-go, the two parties are misaligned. And I think that the innovation, the way I think about innovation, is something new that creates new value. And yes, it's a simplistic definition, but it gives us a starting point so that both of those situations are covered. So that senior leaders that have perhaps responsibility to Wall Street or to investors or stakeholders, that they need to provide some sort of a return, they need to increase profits, they need to grow this year and next year, well, something new that creates new value may provide that, whereas the innovator's goal is to come up with new markets, new sources of growth that maybe are going to take 3 years or 5 years, and that's also covered by that definition. And I think that most organizations that we deal with, the presumption is that the word innovation means new technology. And so the senior leader is thinking, okay, well, we're going to go invent some great new technology, and we're going to be able to apply that and make a lot of money from it. But innovation can come from anywhere inside the business model. It can be distribution. It can be packaging. It could be marketing. It could be something that doesn't have intellectual property in the sense of being able to go and patent. So again, to me, the broader the definition, the better. And then let's start talking about, well, what are the different growth horizons? How are we going to invest in money that we expect to see some sort of a return in the near term? And how do we lay the foundations of growth for the longer term? And so I think that one of the parts of that question was this natural tension. And there is some natural tension there because the senior leaders are going to be thinking about the immediate, right? So I like to say the two questions that kill breakthrough innovation: what's my return on investment, and when am I going to see it? Well, so if we talking about growth, how do we distribute, how do we allocate capital and resources to take it to solve our problems in the near term and lay the foundation so that we don't have those problems 3 years from now and 5 years from now? It completely changes the discussion. So part one is, the innovators have to act like a startup. In that way, the C-suite senior leaders are their customer. And so what do you do when you act like a startup? Well, what we call the three E's of lean innovation, this combination of design thinking plus lean startup. You have to get empathy. You have to run experiments in order to figure out what works and to validate or invalidate your assumptions and use evidence to make your decisions. So you can start off by getting empathy for the senior leaders. And so instead of just assuming that they don't respect innovation or something like that, you understand that what they're really trying to do is solve near-term problems so that the company is successful in the near term. And if you are able to help them solve those near-term problems, it actually justifies your existence to start laying the foundation for the growth that's 3 years or 5 years down the road.
But coming back and picking up on a number of your points there, I mean, we've got this huge misalignment. You've rightly said that. Everybody walks into a room and they've got a very different sort of idea about what innovation might mean. How would you recommend this should be resolved? Because it should be resolved upfront, you know, I would assume of just a detailed, good discussion between a leader or the leaders around the table and the innovators around the table. Sometimes this never happens. Is there a way you can frame this? Is there a way you can sort of make sure you drag everybody to the same point where you can actually say, okay, let's talk a common language, let's talk a common understanding? Because if a leader turns around and says, look, I want an ROI, I don't care, or I want to know just when I'm going to get it, that's it. Now, if you're talking on the same page as me, then great, we're going to have a great, great conversation. We're going to really storm away with this. How do you counter that? How do you sort of say, well, hold on a minute?
Well, you know, a lot of this comes down to the internal culture and you know, it's, and surely culture is part of the obstacle here. If you have leaders that are just going to dictate, then, you know, your innovation program is in trouble from the beginning. And so I think that, in my personal opinion, the way one handles this is that you just have to be upfront about it. You have to be willing to ask two questions. What does innovation mean to you? And what is the outcome that you expect? I think it's super interesting that human beings, it's actually difficult for them to articulate outcomes. They think about things in terms of behavior and activity, but it's difficult for them to think about outcomes that aren't just financial, right? So if they say, like, well, we're looking for new revenue, then you have to be able to follow that conversation. It's like, well, new revenue by when? You know, if we were going to, there's analogies that you can use. If you're going to acquire a company, they already have sort of a pro forma for when they expect to be able to integrate that company. And it's not right away. The return on investment of that acquisition is not 6 months. It's 2 or 3 years down the road. Or if we are deciding we're going to open up, we're going to take these products to a new geography. We're going to go and open this up in India, which is enough cultural differences that we're not going to be able to just drop the product in there and do marketing and sales the way we've always done it. Most companies already have a plan that they know that they're not going to see a return on investment for several years when they're doing, you know, that type of growth initiative, which frankly isn't really quote unquote innovation. But so we want to have the same discussion around creating new growth. And so there's expectations, and this is what we need to unearth. Where are the expectations that the growth is going to happen in the next year or two versus the growth that's going to happen in 3 years, and that we're investing in growth that's going to be 5 years down the road? And so to me, it's putting these time capsules around it. And you know what? I think we might get into this, but the most accounting people, most finance teams have different buckets for those timelines. The finance team kind of are, oh, you mean it's R&D. Okay, so 5 years down the road. Oh, it's CapEx. So that's 2 or 3 years. So what we want to do is get them out of the mindset that everything that's going on in quote-unquote innovation is operational. And I think when these companies spin up new programs like labs, it's coming out of an operational budget. And so the accounting people, the finance people are automatically thinking that the return should be happening right away. And so the conversations are, you know, they go south very quickly because it's like, no, I just spun up the lab. There's no way I've got a return yet. So it needs to be upfront. It needs to be putting timelines around the returns based upon the activity that's being financed. And so you have to ask the question.
Yeah. And I also think, as you rightly say, the empathy, the experience, the evidence, the experiments in all of that area, I think you need to somehow draw that into the conversation.
Right.
What you're looking for from the other side is you're looking for, well, what's your inspirational point? What are you looking for out of innovation? You know, what do you see as the obstacles within your current business that you would like to see change? Do you see that, you know, do you see that as an immediate? Is there a big fire on? You know, we've got to burn into the platform, or is it we're seeing something that we need to put some dedicated resources to over the next few years? So you begin to sort of appeal to that, as you say, the empathetic side, that logical, hopefully sort of a CEO type side. And then, as you say, you can very neatly break it down into those three buckets or those three horizons and begin to get a quite a sensible conversation going on between them. But
yeah, I think that's a great point.
I think, but as you rightly say, I think healthy tension is not a bad thing, because if you don't have healthy tension from the very beginning, the chances are it's not going to be healthy. It's going to be unhealthy tension going forward. You've really got to have those conversations, I think. And I think one of the risks is people avoid them, and I think they should confront them.
I think that's a great point, Paul. There's a number of people that I talk to about these type of things, and they've already decided in their mind what the response is going to be. And so they go like, well, I won't even broach it. This happens with legal all the time, right? Well, I know legal's going to say no, so I'm not going to go and ask legal. And we were doing a workshop with this company where they were out running experiments, and they said, legal will never allow us to do that. I said, well, go talk to the general counsel. Oh, no, you have to book, you know, weeks in advance. There's no way. I got to just go try. And they come back 15 minutes later, and they said, oh, yeah, they made this slight little tweak and then said, we're good to go. So I totally agree with you. The conversation is avoided because we already assume what the response is to be. But if you think about a startup will never get started if that's how they treated their customers, right? And I also think that something that you alluded to is that it's two-way. So maybe what the problem is maybe the innovator thinks that they're the customer and that the C-suite is the startup, or the senior leader should be acting like the startup. And there's truth to that. So certainly the finance team should also be acting like a startup. And they have a responsibility not only to protecting the core business, but they also do have a responsibility for protecting future growth. And so if the finance team is acting like a startup, then they can go get empathy for the business units and the innovation teams so that they can come up with policies, practices, guardrails that allow the innovation team to move quickly. So it does go both ways, but I guess that's the first step, is to get everybody on board that it goes both ways.
I've got a question for you, Brent. I mean, doesn't the word startup sometimes create the wrong type of tension from the very beginning? Because there you are in a large organization, you've got maybe a few thousand people, you know, working around you, you've appointed a couple of, you know, two, three people, and in they come, they say, we're going to treat this like a whole startup environment. Most CEOs, well, would love to be like a startup, you know, they know that they're never going to be one. How do you maybe rephrase startup in a way that's going to sort of make the CEO sort of sit up and reflect a little bit differently? Because I wonder if that sometimes becomes part of the problem. You take a startup mentality into a boardroom, and the boardroom is not equipped to be in the startup mode. So isn't there some tension again, some alienation between them? What would be your sort of thought on that?
Yeah, so to me, it's all very contextual. So I agree with you. If I'm doing a keynote or we're introducing all of this to executives, I really don't use the word startup, and I don't talk about really lean startup either. I call it lean innovation. But when I'm talking about startup in this context, I'm talking about a team inside the company that is developing empathy, running experiments, and using evidence to make decisions. And that's sort of my definition of entrepreneurial spirit and how you act like a startup. For the broader organization, I would never say that the organization should run like a startup, because we have to protect the core business. The core business is already in execution mode, and we should protect that. And a startup, and this is what the fear is among leadership, is that the word startup is threatening the existence of the core business. So when I'm talking at that level, at the context of this core business and the company wide, the way I broach it is this idea of uncertainty. So where is there uncertainty in the company? And it's within, trying to reduce that uncertainty is where you act like a startup, only in that compartment. So if you're in the core business and you're trying to achieve milestones, we've worked for a company that didn't talk about innovation at all. They said, we're trying to double our revenues in the next 2 years. So maybe they know how they're going to get to doubling the revenues by improving execution. Maybe they know that they're 75% there in their planning. Maybe they can do continuous improvement to shorten sales cycles, and that increases some capacity to grow. But there's often then a degree of uncertainty there. They're 25% short in hitting their numbers in their planning phase. Well, that 25% should be overcome using lean innovation principles. You can't just execute in that 25%, or you're more likely to fail than succeed. So you have small amounts of uncertainty in the core business, but we want to act like a startup in that small. And then over on the innovation side, if you're trying to do breakthrough innovation, there's massive amounts of uncertainty. And so that's the predominant way of working. So in the end, when I'm talking to the C-suites, it's about the balance of search and execution or search and operations. And where you apply these principles is based upon where the uncertainty is.
Yeah, I think it's neat because there's two or three things I was sort of listening to and wanted to pick up on. One is, you know, a lot of experiment, a lot of sort of exploring. Organizations are doing that all the time. It's you're not talking any new language.
What you should
actually try to formalize it maybe a little bit more, or you're trying to bring it in under the innovation sort of umbrella so people recognize, but you're saying, I'm going to give it a lot more emphasis. I'm going to give it a lot more, you know, the key of what I'm doing. If you ask anybody, well, what does a research organization do? It's doing a ton of that stuff. It may not be doing it as slick as it should be or as lean as it should be, but the more you introduce some principles that are going to speed up maybe your own work, might also be seen by the chief executive as, oh, that's interesting. Maybe we should actually then educate our research people a little bit on some of these lean principle startups and how they experiment and see where there's differences. Maybe there's something there. So you've already given a bit of value into the conversation that could be broader. The other one that I think you also said is, which I liked again, is we all deal with uncertainty. And the moment you bring up uncertainty, you can go again two ways. I like to go the way where you just say, we all identify with uncertainty. What we're all trying to do is reduce down uncertainty. And we do that through risk mitigation. We do that through experimentation. We do that through conversations. We do that through team building. We do that through a ton of different things. I'm sort of like on your team as an innovator, and I am talking a lot of your language. But I may talk it in a slightly different way, which is quite exciting because it's sort of more maybe the terminology we are tending to use in an innovation area, but it can deliver all the things that you're talking about within your organization. It brings it for me into a point of common language.
And it's right.
So picking out, as you've talked, you know, picking out the strands that you could actually rethread into the conversation. I think then you get maybe leadership a lot more, if not relaxed, a lot more sort of ready and willing and able to let the guys do it. Is there any sort of tool or any methodology you've come up which just is a great, you know, like a visual that you know, if you put that up, either the CEO just looks and he spends all his time looking at the visual, or just that this is fabulous. You're telling me what I need to know. Is there something like that in your opinion?
I'm not sure that I've seen it. I've tried to draw those diagrams myself, but there's so many different components to it that I think that the diagram ends up being super complicated and leadership is all, you know, they kind of roll their eyes and keep moving. So I think that certainly my presentations, my decks tend to be pretty visual. And so I'll talk about the search versus the execution, but I think a lot of it is, it's the words as well. So it's a great question. And I think it's like, yeah, we're trying for that, but I'm not sure I've nailed that one visual yet.
I don't think any of us have really, but the one I always like, of course, is one where you get this huge scribble and then it runs out to a low line. A bit like,
right.
like you've had a heart attack and it's scribble and you come out to the end. To me, honestly, that's what arguably it's about. It's enormous amount of sort of, you know, tension and confusion and problems. But in the end, you're beginning to concentrate that down and it becomes more of a, like a normal beating heart. And that's what you want to achieve in innovation. You know, that's
right. Right.
Not a bad way of explaining it, but, you know.
Yeah.
Do you think the conversation should be... I think we've confirmed it. The conversation should really be prompted by the entrepreneur himself with the chief executive. He should go out there, he should seek the chief executive out or the leaders out and try to have this type of conversation we're having.
Yeah, again, I think for it to succeed, to me, the CEO, the C-suite, the board even needs to be on board for, yes, we're going to, you know, we buy into the story that all of these companies need to change, right? So they need to be bought into change, I think. I think it's very difficult for an entrepreneur or an innovation team to actually convince the C-suite that this really needs to happen. So my presumption is that they've already bought into it at some level. If they haven't, then they just, you know, maybe need to read more because I fundamentally believe these organizations have to change top to bottom. If they're paying, you know, even lip service to it so that it feels like they're bought on, then yes, I think that the entrepreneur should be the one that's leading the conversation around defining it. Because I think that most of the business executives only understand it at a high level. If they want it to happen, they don't necessarily know how to make it happen. And so they're actually leaning on the entrepreneurs to figure out how to make it happen. They don't even necessarily know that they already have, I think, in just about every company, grassroots level people that are already acting this way. Design thinkers, agile developers, people that are maybe doing startups on the side or have done startups in the past. That entrepreneurial spirit already exists inside the organization, but it's quite possible the C-suite doesn't know that. And so to me, the innovators, the entrepreneurs can bring that to the CEO. And that's going to, I think, already start creating that empathy and start creating that understanding between the two groups. And then you get to the definitions and you get down to the, you know, the growth horizon conversation. And I think you're down a pretty healthy path.